Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the first ever Selectivist Action Group, People. It's been suggested a few times that as well as talking to MPs, journalists and comedians, I should also talk to some actual selectivists turned activists during the podcast. Some people who've got themselves motivated and have just gone out there and done something. So coming up, I talked to a couple of lads who drove a London taxi 43,000 miles around the world, raising 20 grand for the Red Cross. Before that, I should remind you that in a couple of weeks' time, for the February Selectivist Action Group, I will be talking to Margaret Hodge, MP for Barking and ex-chair of the Public Accounts Committee, Times columnist and former Tony Blair speechwriter Philip Collins, and author, stand-up and new president of the British Humanist Association, Shappy Corsandi. But now, Ernest Hemingway said you should always do sober what you said you'd do drunk. Three lads did, and ended up circumnavigating the globe in a 20-year-old London taxi, taking 15 months, breaking two world records, and getting arrested just the twice. I caught up with two of them ahead of their book launch for It's On The Meter. Joined here by Paul Archer and Lee Purnell. Now, as I understand, the story started, Paul, you're coming home drunk in a taxi, you're watching an Attenborough documentary about kangaroos, and it suddenly struck you, oh, well, why don't we take a taxi and drive all the way to Australia to see kangaroos? Is that pretty much how it started?
I mean, yeah, in a nutshell, I think it was, yeah, it was pretty much a ridiculous drunken idea that we thought, oh, wouldn't that be fun? Surely there's a world record we could break. Yeah. What's the longest ever taxi journey? Turns out someone had a world record. We thought, why don't we do it? So
it was one of those achievable world records. So we'd had that idea for a while. Lots of people say we flew around the world, and you realise they've gone to about four different cities, and it's cost them 10 grand. And so after we graduated, we were like, well, we want to do something different to that, and let's break a world record. And so we looked for the longest ever car journey, and I think that was still going on after like 14 years. And I think we jointly agreed that's not what we want to do.
No. Well, especially if it's ongoing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even if you started it, you're never quite sure how long you're going to go for.
Well, we saw people, which will probably come up later on, actually had kids on the way during their journey. So
Not on our journey.
Space in that taxi,
maybe
though.
There are some that no one knows about.
Little John O'Ellison.
Around the world.
That's good, we get to talk about him and he can't actually reprise it.
So we should say who John O'Ellison is. This is the third member of the group who is not here to defend himself, so we're going to slag him off as much as we can.
Yeah, he's the scapegoat.
And the big idea, wasn't it, was that you were going in a taxi, and of course any taxi driver would not go in a straight line. He would go round the houses, which is why effectively a 20,000 mile journey took you somewhere in the region of 43,000 miles.
Yep, that's exactly it. We tried to go the longest route possible to rack up the fare, so we had the meter on the whole way. And that involved us going all the way up into Northern Europe, through Russia, through Europe, Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Pakistan, and then up into India, into India, Tibet, China, Southeast Asia, Australia, then across the states back to London.
Very open-minded taxi driving, this is.
Big squiggly line, right through the middle of the map.
All over the place.
And there's a moment fairly early on, I'm guessing, when this joke is worn a bit thin fairly quickly, and you're going, why did we bother to go quite such a circuitous route?
That was probably the first time the radiator blew up, and that was in Iraq. And so we prepped the car to, it wasn't just a standard taxi, we added lots of parts to it. And one of the things that taxi drivers always told us about these cars, this was a taxi that had driven for 20 years on the streets of London. So it was on its way out anyway. And so they were like, no, it's the cooling. So we're like, all right, we're going to hot countries, put better cooling on it. That makes sense. Just before we got to the hot country, I'm not saying anybody, but Paul Archer didn't keep his eye on the dashboard.
I heard it was Jono, because he's not here.
And the radiator blew up. So we were sitting there just before it got really hot with a radiator that was not working. So we ended up in a bazaar in Iraq fixing the radiator with all the spare parts in this bazaar getting brazed together and this new radiator being built. And we were going, this is just insane. Like, what the hell are we doing? But it worked.
So geek it up for us just very briefly. You've got this taxi, a 20-year-old taxi. You're trying to take it to Australia. You don't think it's going to quite make it in its current state. Very briefly, what did you do to it to make it get all the way there?
I argued my place for a snorkel and a winch. And most of the other parts were accepted generally, including the enormous sound system that we ended up putting in the car. But the winch and the snorkel were like this thing. Oh, it's too expensive. It's too heavy. And so during the trip, I had to prove that we were going to actually use these things. Luckily, we did. I think we used each a bunch of times. But when we were in the garage getting it all ready and stressed, and these two were arguing, why are you spending hours and hours getting all this set up? We don't need it. But then we did.
Well,
so it's all good.
There are some fun facts at the end of the book. One is that the winch gets used 3 times.
Yeah.
One is that you were arrested.
It was more like twice.
Yeah, maybe
less.
Three.
Just trying to justify it more and more. Yeah, snorkel 17 times.
Just to get us out of the parking lot. I was just like, yeah, use the winch. We were driving between the main city in Iran, Tehran, and Homs. Quetta. Is it Quetta?
No.
Quetta's in Pakistan, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was between there anyway. Yeah.
Somewhere
on
Iran.
The way.
Yeah.
This wasn't why
you were arrested, because you had no idea where you
were.
That was the thing on the trip as well. We generally, a lot of the time, didn't have any idea where we were heading. We literally just went the focus of where's the sun rising, that's west.
And there's a good reason for this. We had lots of great maps, like really good maps of all the places we needed to go to. We weren't going to get lost at all. But we left them behind. So we did that typical thing.
Is it the sound system or the maps?
It was like, which one should we do? I don't know, at some crazy pack, and when we were leaving, someone forgot the maps and we didn't know what we were doing. So we used SatNav for the first sort of 2 weeks, and then we were sort of 4 weeks in and we're still using SatNav, and then we're sort of 5 or 6 weeks in still using SatNav, which doesn't have any maps really.
Yeah, we only had the European maps, so when
should we see how far we can go without using any maps? And we actually ended up doing it the whole way without using any maps the whole way. We basically just asked for directions, used the SatNav, which didn't have any maps installed on that, and just generally head in the same direction. It got us there in the end.
Yeah, and he didn't care if you went slightly wiggling. It was more of a taxi ride.
Exactly. Yes. And so, yeah, when we were driving down the motorway late at night, so Iran actually has good motorways, which was a surprise for us from all the roads we'd driven previously. And it was lit up, so we were driving until about 11 o'clock at night. So it was this, in the middle of the desert, pitch black, apart from this good bit of motorway. And so we pulled over at the side of the road, pitched our tents. Luckily, the guys got me a nice shiny pink tent as well, because I wasn't in the buying process of this when I was fixing the car before we left. So they had nice green tents. I had this Barbie pink version. And so we woke up in the morning.
Inconspicuous.
I got out of the tent in the middle of this desert. And I got out, Jono stuck his head out and he was like, is that artillery? And I was like, what? Turned my head and there was this massive anti-aircraft gun. Right behind us. And Paul, get up. Like, we need to get out of here now. So we're packing away. Jono's taking photos of this thing. The list, the 5 things that you shouldn't do when you find, like, anti-aircraft weaponry
in Iran. A military installation.
Yeah. Take photos and log the GPS coordinates. So you kind of don't think that would be what you should be doing. And so we were packed, and as we were packing, we had saw two Jeeps coming over and got stopped for several hours. We found out 2 weeks before that two American guys had been arrested because they took photos of pylons. Now, here's Jono taking photo of pylons and an anti-aircraft gun, and we're going... It was one of those situations where we didn't realise how bad it actually was until we were about a week later, and then we went, oh, that was pretty bad.
How but... sad is your holiday that you've got to take photos of pylons? That's a... So to qualify for the world record, you needed a passenger in the cab at all times. And so you two, as I remember rightly, struggled with some visas at some point.
So John is left in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere, on the border between Iran and Pakistan, one of the most dangerous places in the world.
And he's got to take a hitchhiker with him just to qualify for the record.
So this is exactly it. So he finds himself this Aussie hitchhiker. He just says, hey, do you want to... drive across Pakistan in a black cab, and the guy's like, yeah, all right. So he immediately just says, he hires this guy, he gets this guy in, the two of them then have this incredible adventure for about 4 or 5 days, crossing across the border.
And you can imagine in the very desolate part of the bridge between Iran, Pakistan and Helmand province in Afghanistan, there's not much internet. And so we were getting a little bit more worried that he was taking a bit longer than previously. And then Paul saw a BBC news flash coming across the screen saying, two Europeans kidnapped in Balochistan, Pakistan, which is where Jono was. And at that point,
had to be him.
We were devastated. The world record was ruined. We didn't think we'd ever make it.
Yeah, and basically, like...
And then it turned out it was two other people, and you're celebrating. Not Jono! It was somebody else!
Isn't that such a horrible thing to do? We were like, yes! It was two Swiss people. So we're like, Switzerland, like, it's a bit neutral, so hopefully they'll get freed, but...
So you had 102 passengers. That's one of the facts in the book. Now, on Uber now, you get to rate your passengers. So who would you say was your worst passenger?
Other than Lee and Jono?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. The guy in Iran that just jumped in our car.
Yeah,
he was quite... he'd be there.
Yeah, you were just going slowly and he suddenly thought...
He let himself into the car and he had a full urn of tea, which he took with him and then started to then shout and abuse us for driving too slowly and tell us where he wanted to go.
He was smoking.
And so we took him to where... Yeah, starts lighting up cigarettes and
you're the best taxi drivers ever. We're like, somebody wanted to say, no, of course we'll go where you're going.
About 30 seconds in, though, I was sitting in the back and I saw, you know, the sensors that you have on where you have they test your heart and everything, and I was like, he's just pulled a sensor, like he looks like he'd just come out of the hospital. And the place where we were going,
it wasn't an urn, it was a little drip.
Just taking all the drugs there.
We had some crazy guys. Some guy who was a session bassist for the Prodigy come in, and we had some a murderer was in our car. We did kind of give it. So this Aussie,
so a man who's dying and a murderer.
Yeah, we kind of like got all the spectrums, didn't we? Yeah. We actually had to go find a mechanic to do some serious work we needed tools for. So we met this guy called Brando, and he came and he did loads of amazing work on the car, and he helped us. And he basically wouldn't accept any money for it. Oh, no, you guys raising money for charity. No, you don't worry about it.
Seemed like a good guy.
Seemed like a great guy. We bought him a couple
mechanic.
Of crates.
Yeah, that's great what mechanic. I think. Great mechanic. He replaced the windscreen and stuff he as did well. All of these. Like,
we bought him a load of beer as well because he seemed like a great lad. You know, we put them in his fridge and everything. And then about 6 months later, we get this.
He's
this
a recovering cool. alcoholic and it all went
we were the star. That was our fault. We did. Yeah, we get a call from the Cairns police asking about, because we wrote a blog the whole way and wrote a particular blog about that scene when he'd showed us a photo of his 6-month-old kid with a gun, which admittedly did raise some alarms.
But assured us.
He was like, no, it's fine. It's only a 22, apparently. Yeah. And then, so we get this call up from the Cairns police asking about his whereabouts and whether we could explain what kind of guns he may have showed us, because turns out he was, at that time, Australia's most wanted man. Because he apparently killed two of his customers, ironically, who obviously didn't buy him any beer.
And the wheels fell off your taxi at one point. What's the story behind the wheels falling off?
Yeah, that was... So we'd apparently been driving along one of the world's most dangerous roads. It was along the mountainside in Nepal, going from one of the big cities to the other. And got into the main city, and I went over the smallest bump in the road, and all I heard was this whole thing and the wheel coming off. Now, I was by myself at this point because these guys were still away. The wheel was being held on by just the brake lines, and that was it. The whole ball joint fell apart. And so I was sitting there going, I don't know anyone, trying to fix the car. And what was quite funny at that point...
But then you had a winch.
The wheel came off right in front of a military barracks in Nepal. And so they got the tank trap out, the thing to lift up the tanks to replace the treads.
So you raised the 20 grand for the Red Cross in the process.
Yeah.
What made you choose the Red Cross? Was there any particular reason?
It was basically because it was one of the most international charities that we could go for. We thought that along the way we'd be able to see some of their work as well, which was definitely a real big thing for us.
Yeah.
And we all realised, we're like, well, which charity should we go for? What's the one that unifies the three of us? And we weren't really sure. And then we realised, what do we all give to? And it turns out all three of us were giving to the Red Cross, so it seemed like an obvious choice.
Yeah.
And they also offered to give us some sort of like
really
super training and how we can... Well, they gave us a book called How to Stay Alive.
We said to him, do you have like a security consultant we can talk to, go through the route? And we spent one morning down in London and she went, you're pretty much fine apart from these areas. And out of the three areas, she picked two of them we were going to, including the bit where Jono got caught on the Pakistan border.
Don't sort of film the pylons. That was the rule one.
Yes.
We did loads of press things along the way. Like interviews, all sorts of different things, from like tiny little American stations to woke up one morning to find the front page of the Wall Street Journal, which was like completely unexected. And the whole way we were taking,
we love those Brits.
We were like, oh my god, these crazy Brits! They walked out of a pub, bought a cab, and drove around the world. we were basically just we didn't know what we were doing. We had there was no PR team or training.
No, it was literally us on laptops,
just us
stealing
laptops.
People's Wi-Fi
all,
every night.
All people getting in touch with us and asking for it. And so the whole way through all of these interviews, we'd just be ripping the shit out of each other in them, and then just coming up with stupid words. If one person's on front of the screen, there'd be two people behind the camera just like making faces, trying to distract them, or there'd be a number of different words that we had to get in that like sort of like buzzwords to. Like,
we could call that training. That was like training to be able to public speak and stuff, because having that distraction behind you just meant that you didn't have to worry about anything else.
But we were, I mean...
So this is where we expect Jono to turn up behind you now.
Ta-da!
Naked arms coming towards us.
that one did happen.
That's surprising.
And are you itching to do something quite as adventurous again? Or have you got that out of your system now, do you think?
Yeah, we were just chatting about that then. I think we're not going to do anything for 15 months. I think that was just a once in a lifetime. That's a hell of a lot of time to spend in it. In a tin box with two smelly lads, basically. You don't want to do that again.
There's pros and cons.
I think there's definitely a lot of them. But I think we've all got the bug. We've done a couple of sort of smaller little adventures since, and you know, we've got these crazy ideas always bouncing around to do. You know, you want to ride a motorbike across the channel. I want to break the world record for the longest ever snowmobile across a desert because it's never been done. You know, these are sort of things you can fit into a month or two.
There seems to be a reason why that may have never been done.
It's got skis.
The same logic that we had like 5 years ago where it was like, taxis? Why no? Everyone's done that before, obviously. No.
Why not give it a go?
So somebody's gone to a football match. They've seen a police horse. They come back a bit drunk. They're watching a documentary on penguins. And they suddenly think, I'm going to ride a police horse to Antarctica. What would your advice be?
Do it.
But at least find out if it's been done before.
Because there might be a world record in that one.
And then go on eBay and buy a police horse.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if they do that, but you buy everything on eBay, so fine.
Make sure there's not somebody who's been doing it for 14 years who's still trying to
get there.
That was the one thing that we saw straight away, that everyone at home was like, you guys are crazy. Like even the sponsors that originally jumped on board with us, when we got back, they were like, we didn't expect you to even leave Europe. So that was the sort of the joy of us going all the way around the world.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.